The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
I'm Annie Apple, and I'm here to invite you to come and listen to my new podcast series, Raising a Pro. It's the most intimate sports-related conversations you will hear. Each week, we explore the journeys of some of your favorite NFL players through the eyes of those that know them best. From Joe Burrow, DeAndre Hopkins, Myles Garrett, Ezekiel Elliott, Nick and Joey Bosa, just to name a few. With exclusive insights and information, we leave no stone unturned. Subscribe now to Raising a Pro on your favorite podcast app.
HD Smartcast.
You are listening to a Mint production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hello, welcome to our new podcast, The Signal
and the Noise,
that will attempt to give you a peek into the inner workings of Mint's long stories. This is Sunit.
And I am Ajay.
And we are both editors with Mint. Welcome to this post-Diwali podcast. Ajay is on leave, and this is Sunit. I have an erudite economist as a guest today. Vivek Kaul is arguably India's most accessible economist today. He's the author of many books, including most recently Bad Money, about the mess in India's banking system. He also writes regularly for Mint, specifically for the long stories many of you enjoy reading. I am a student of economics too, and we all know how economists love to hide behind jargon and heavy math. Some feel that's because there's too much pressure for economics to prove that it is a science after all. In recent years, there has been a welcome revision in how economics has taken elements of the social sciences to make its message more accessible and relevant. I mention all of this because Vivek's writing approach is unorthodox, and he does try to engage with the audience. This is important for any writer, but even more so for an economist. Of course, all his arguments are backed by numbers. Recently, Vivek wrote a long story about the fog of economic recovery, where he argues that all is not well. Let's find out why he's saying. Hi, Vivek. Good to have you on board on The Signal and the Noise.
Hi, Sunit. Thanks for having me over.
Well, you know, over the last few weeks, there have been a slew of news that have many commentators have felt suggested the Indian economy is out of the woods. You argue in your long story that this is not entirely true. Why?
It depends on how we look at the situation. And most people who have argued that the economy is out of the woods are essentially, comparing data as of today with data as of, you know, the period between April and June. So, like, there are these real estate stories going around that, the demand has gone through the roof and stuff like that. I mean, obviously, the demand will go through the roof because, you know, between April and June, the last thing on people's minds was to go out and buy a house. Also, if you look at a lot of other data points, and specifically what I did in my long story piece was to look at year-on-year growth. Now, why is year-on-year growth important? Year-on-year growth is important because of the simple fact that economic growth, as we measure it, or GDP growth as we measure it, is measured year-on-year. What I mean by that is that when GDP data as of September 30th, 2020 comes out, it will be compared with GDP data as of September 30th, 2019. So that is year-on-year. Now, nobody compares in an Indian context GDP data as of September 30th with GDP data as of March 31st. Okay. So that sort of comparison doesn't happen.
So just to explain to listeners here.
One of the points, that extended points I made in that piece was on two-wheeler sales, right? So we compared two-wheeler sales for the period October 2020 with two-wheeler sales for the period October 2019 and not, two-wheeler sales for the period October 2020 with May 2020. I mean, obviously, in comparison to May 2020, things will look a lot better. Also, one of the things that since we're talking two-wheeler sales, that has happened in specific to two-wheelers and cars is the fact that a lot of inventory buildup has happened at the dealer level. How did we arrive at that? There are two kinds of data that get published in case of automobiles. One is the data that is published by the automobile manufacturers, or you know, as they call them, the original equipment manufacturers, the OEMs. And the other is the data published by the dealers who sell these automobiles. Now, as per the data published by the OEMs, the sales have been going up, and you know, going up quite a lot. But what that sale essentially represents is the number of units that leave the factory. That does not mean sale to the end consumer. In order to measure sales to the end consumer, you look at dealer data, which is basically registration data or the number of vehicles that have been registered at the RTO offices all across the country. And that gives you a huge deviation. So in the month of October, the sales as per the automobile manufacturers were more than 2 million. Whereas if you look at the registrations, they were closer to 1 million. Now, obviously, you know, there is one thing that we need to say here is the fact that when it comes to the registration system, it still does not capture data in three states, MP, Telangana and Andhra Pradesh. But that, you know, those three states cannot be, the difference of 1 million units cannot be just because of three states. So clearly there is an inventory buildup happening at the dealer level. In hope that you know, all this inventory will be cleared up during Diwali. So, you know, meaning people will go out there and buy bikes and scooters and mopeds. Now, whether that happens remains to be seen. If that does not happen, what we will specifically see is that the sales reported by automobile companies in the months to come will start to come down dramatically.
You've been writing about auto companies and how their sales have not been fully representative, and dealers will probably be left with a huge amount of inventory. And, you know, we've been seeing all the ads about cars, and auto sales have been rising. But, you know, I wanted to step back for a minute and understand from you that before we go to the bad news, what has improved? What are the few things that have improved in your sample of 20 parameters? You had mentioned electricity, railway freight. Is there anything else?
Electricity production has improved. Railway freight has improved. Then there's, I think, steel consumption has also improved. Let me just check.
You also, cars, you argue that in Diwali last year was in October. So for purposes of comparison,
yes. So even though car sales in October this year were lower than car sales in October last year, we need to take into account the fact that Diwali last year was in October. Hence, once you sort of adjust for that fact, you can say that car sales have been growing in comparison to automobile sales. Now, I think the logic there is that, because of fears of COVID, a lot of people who probably had been, you know, who had the money but hadn't gotten around to purchasing cars, are now buying cars. That is a possible explanation. But two-wheelers are not. I mean, and I guess, you know, two-wheelers represent the economy more because, you know, the simple fact that India is still not a very huge car market. The beauty of two-wheeler sales is that if you break it down between motorcycles and scooters, you get a very good idea of the rural market as well as the urban market. Now, motorcycles are obviously bought all across the country, whereas scooters are more of an urban product. So that is why, two-wheeler sales are a better thing to look at.
Indicator.
Okay. Another point, I think one thing that had improved that we didn't talk about is revenue earning rail freight. So this is essentially, the Indian Railways sort of moves around a lot of commodities around the country, including majorly coal, but also, cement, food grains and some other stuff. Now, what has happened here is that because the government of India is giving out food grains free across the country, so the movement of food grains has gone up dramatically, which is one reason behind the revenue earning rail freight going up. The other reason is some sort of a base effect. You know, this is something that people told me after I wrote the story. I didn't know about this. Is the fact that in September last year, coal movement had sort of come down primarily because some coal mines had been flooded. So because of that, coal movement had come down, and which is why the revenue rail, earning rail freight is sort of looking better this year. So
why do you feel that the rural economy is not that strong? I mean, haven't tractor sales done well?
Yes, tractor sales is one, I think they have done astonishingly well. And I think the only explanation for that lies in the fact that, agriculture remains possibly the only part of the economy which has been doing well. And tractor sales in October, in fact, were up 55.5%. And we are talking about registrations here, not the number reported by the tractor company. So, if registrations have gone up 55%, it's safe to say that end sales are actually happening. I think this is, tractor sales, again, like car sales, like car sales represent the urban rich, how are the urban rich are consuming, tractor sales represent how the rural rich are consuming. And it is, just looking at tractor sales is not sort of, it's not fair to draw a conclusion that rural India is doing well. I think we need to look at two other indicators. One is the, the margin, the volume growth of FMCG companies, and the volume growth of and in this particular case I looked at volume growth of Hindustan Unilever, which is by far the biggest FMCG company. The volume growth is essentially, it measures an increase in sales or the number of units the company sells, and not the profitability of the sales represented in terms of rupees. The volume growth was just 1% July to September against 5% in the same period last year. So what that tells you is that the company is finding it difficult to sell more units of its products. Now, this is again another reflection of the fact that the rural economy is not doing well, because, FMCG, a lot of FMCG sales are. The other, I think, indicator that I looked at, and which is a much stronger indicator, is essentially the total number of jobs being demanded under NREGA. And NREGA is the National Rural Employment Guarantee scheme, and that guarantees 100 hours of work to every household if it, obviously if it demands so. If you look at the work demanded under NREGA, and this is for the month of October, it has gone up 88%, 88.5% in fact. NREGA is a rural scheme. I mean, it doesn't have an urban version. So what that tells you very, very clearly is that people are finding it difficult to get jobs in the rural economy. And we need to remember that NREGA is absolutely low-end manual work. And the amount of money paid is around 202 rupees on an average across the country. So people opt for it only if they are very, very desperate. It's not like if you have, jobs available, they are going to pay you more than 200 rupees a day. So I think these two factors tell us very clearly that the rural economy is not doing well. And there is a third factor, which is not there in this piece. It's not so clearly there in this piece. Is the fact that the labor participation rate has fallen, and it has fallen, both in rural India as well as in urban India. Now, the fall is greater in urban India because urban India does not have any version of the NREGA. But even in rural India, there has been a fall. Now, what that means essentially is that the labor force has contracted. Now, why has the labor force contracted? The labor force has contracted because a lot of people who cannot find jobs have given up on finding jobs. So when you give up on, finding a job, you automatically get dropped out of the labor force. Now, so in the end result is that the unemployment rate falls. But the unemployment rate falling is not because of jobs being generated, not totally because of jobs being generated, but also because of the fact that many people who have tried looking for a job and not found one have given up on the idea of finding a job. So if you include all these factors, I think the rural economy is not doing as well as it's, as we are being told that that it is. What I was also trying to say here is that, there is a basic structural thing here. Ultimately, if you look at, one of the themes that was initially sort of bandied around COVID started to spread is the fact that agriculture will drive the overall Indian economy. Now, that is not, is simply not possible, simply because agriculture is around 15-16% of the Indian economy. So, 15% cannot drive the remaining 85%. Now, the fact that agriculture is doing well is good news. But it cannot use that to conclude that just because agriculture is doing well, the rural economy will do well, and in turn the overall India will do well. In fact, as has been written by many analysts, agriculture as such forms only 30% of the rural economy. So even there, even agriculture doing well cannot drive even the rural economy totally. Forget the overall economy. So.
Yes, the great rural hinterland is not only farmers. It's a lot more than that.
This is precisely, when stock market guys offer reasons in favor of investing in stocks, these are the reasons they offer primarily because they may have a good understanding of stocks, but their understanding of the economy is very, very shaky. So
I was going to ask you that, because if I ask my school friends, they always point to the markets, and of course the markets are roaring right now. Now, you and I have discussed this in the past, and we know the Indian markets can be shallow, but this distortion is not helping matters. And even when these numbers are coming in, and amongst all the indicators you've looked at, the market is roaring. So how would you respond to that? What are they seeing?
So there are it's purely a money play now. The fact is, post 2008, a lot of stock markets all across the world have been driven by all the money that's been printed by Western central banks. Now, with Joe Biden becoming
president,
getting ready to take over as president in January, the hope is that more money will be printed, more money will be spent, and a lot of money will again come into stock markets like India, which is why the market has been, the latest rally is primarily because of that. Surprisingly, what has happened is that companies have managed to sort of contain their costs. So even though their sales haven't gone up, they've managed to contain their costs, and their profits have gone up in the July to September quarter. So I guess that can also be a reason. But, after taking these factors, and there is a third factor, lest I forget. And the third factor is simply the fact that, when your post-tax earnings on FDs are, around 4%, there will be a certain section of the population which will try and gamble a part of their money in stocks in the hope of earning a better rate of return. So once you take these factors into account, they help you explain why the stock market and stock prices have been going up. Now, even with the increased earnings, the Nifty PE still continues to be 33. Now, price to earnings ratio. Now, this kind of, which basically means that the price of the stocks that make up for the Nifty index are essentially 33 times more than their earnings per share. Now, these kind of valuations have never been seen before. So the point is, yes, the market is doing well, but looking at that and saying that the economy is also doing well, or this is the market discounting the fact that the economy will start to do well, I really don't buy that, for the simple reason that, if you look at the price to earnings ratio of the Nifty or the Sensex for the last 8 years, it has gone up every year. So what that means in very, very simple English is that the price of the stock is going up faster than the earnings per share. So the price of the stock is going up faster than the earnings of the company. Now, this has been happening for the past 8 years. So at the end of the day, you need to question, that when the price keeps going up much faster than the earnings, there is a certain disconnect. Now, the problem is that when you ask these stock market guys, how is the economy doing, they substitute that, answering that question with how is the stock market doing. Now, these are two very different questions, and a lot of people do fall for their answers simply because everyone wants the stock market to go up, and people want to be richer than they are.
Now, turning to, since your last book was on banking and bad money, I wanted to ask you about what you learned from bank lending to retail and industry, the numbers there, because that's one of the clearest indicators.
So I think one of the fascinating insights, while writing the book, was the fact that when banks, and public and private both, lend to the retail crowd, they tend to do generally a lot better than when they lend to industry, and especially public sector banks. Also, if you look at the bad loans of public sector banks and private banks when it comes to retail lending, bad loans are basically loans which haven't been repaid for 90 days or more. So when you look at that number, you'll realize that, you know, while the public sector bank retail lending is not as good as private banks, but it's not as bad as their industrial lending also. So in fact, if you look at, you know, SBI's retail lending, it's just superb. I mean, the NPA rate is less than 1%.
What is the state of retail lending today and now, and what does it tell us about the state of the economy?
So, see, retail, the problem with retail lending right now is that there is a case going on in the Supreme Court where the banks have not been allowed to recognize NPAs as NPAs. So, how bad that scene is, so everyone's made their own estimate, but we really don't know, you know, unless, you know, these banks are allowed to make, you know, recognize NPAs as NPAs.
Because there's auto debit numbers that have come out.
Yes, so that sort of suggests that a lot of auto debits are not happening because there isn't enough money in the accounts. But, you know, ultimately, unless the numbers are recognized as bad loans, there is a, you know, we really don't have the correct picture. And I don't know when the next Supreme Court hearing is, but unless the Supreme Court sort of allows banks to recognize loans of, I think, retail loans of up to 2 crore and MSME loans of up to 2 crore as NPAs, we really won't get a correct picture. Because this time around, the hit will not be just at the industry level. It will also be at the retail level. So,
sure. Finally, you know, there's been a lot of good news about the vaccine, or at least we think that things will sort themselves out. So do you think we are seeing the end of the pandemic and hopefully things will improve?
I have no idea, Sunit, honestly, because I mean, one is, I mean, I tried to follow this vaccine thing for a while, and then I realized there are too many nuances to it, and it's just simply not possible for, you know, someone like me who last studied science, biology in class 10th. I mean, obviously, if I put my heart and soul to it, I'll end up understanding it, but then I'll not be able to do anything else. So what is happening right now is that any day there is an announcement that, you know, some company has come up with some vaccine and it has whatever percentage effectiveness. I mean, I guess this news is being used to drive up markets. Now, whether this is ultimately, whether these vaccines will come to us, whether we'll, you know, how much time will it take, what will be the reactions, I don't know. I mean, that will only, I mean, only time will tell. I really don't have an understanding.
That's a good way to end. Only time will tell. Thank you, Vivek.
And for having me.
And for those listening to this podcast, I hope this new format has helped you figure out this big story of our times. Do send us feedback. And as always, stay healthy, eat healthy. Thanks for listening.
You have been listening to The Signal in the Noise, with me being the signal, of course. We would love to hear from you. Reach out to us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram on @HTSmartcast. Or you can also reach out to us personally
at Sunit Arora
and at AJ Axiom. To listen to more such interesting podcasts, do log on to htsmartcast.com. We'll be back next week with a new story and some awesome banter.
And lots of fun.
This was a Mint production brought to you by HT Smartcast.
HT Smartcast.
I'm Annie Apple, and I'm here to invite you to come and listen to my new podcast series, Raising a Pro. It's the most intimate sports-related conversations you will hear. Each week, we explore the journeys of some of your favorite NFL players through the eyes of those that know them best. From Joe Burrow, DeAndre Hopkins, Myles Garrett, Ezekiel Elliott, Nick and Joey Bosa, just to name a few. With exclusive insights and information, we leave no stone unturned. Subscribe now to Raising a Pro on your favorite podcast app.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.